Good morning, and welcome to this month's Hancock & Whitney Bank's Economic Update Call. Hancock Bank and Whitney Bank provide this call as a monthly economic update for general informational purposes only. Information provided during the call is not intended to be investment advice. Opinions are those of the speakers and not necessarily those of Hancock Holding Company or its affiliates. If you have any questions, please email them to david.lundgren@hancockwhitney.com, and he'll take them at the end of the call. On today's call, we have investment directors Richard Chauvin, Greg Hudleski, and Jeffrey Tangus, and Chief Investment Officer David Lundgren.
Thank you, Ashley. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this month's edition of our Market and Economic Update Call. I think we have a really interesting call for you today. First, I'm going to talk about the U.S. economy, which appears to be fairly healthy. Then we're going to talk about three topics that have the potential to disrupt the U.S. economy, starting with Richard Chauvin, who will talk about trade and more specifically some of the tariffs that are being imposed by not only the U.S. but China and other countries. And then we'll turn it over to Greg Hudleski. Greg's going to review the stock market numbers for March, but then also talk about this recent volatility. Obviously, after coming out of very smooth 2017, February and March were a lot more volatile, so we'll hear Greg's thoughts about that. And then lastly, we'll hear from Jeff Tangus, and Jeff's going to talk about interest rates, an environment where the Fed is tightening in the face of a pretty volatile stock market. We'll see if the what Richard and Greg have to say about trade and the stock market have any impact on what the Fed does going forward. So with that, I'll go ahead and start with the U.S. economy, and I'll start with some old news first. Just last week, we received the final revision of fourth quarter GDP for 2017, and that came in a little bit higher than anticipated. The final print or the final number for fourth quarter GDP was up 2.9%. Pretty strong number, and so for the last three quarters of 2017, we finished out at 3.1, 3.2, and 2.9 after a pretty difficult first quarter. Last three quarters finished above 3%, so that was obviously a very positive thing to see. And fast forwarding to the first quarter of this year, it still seems to be that the economic environment here in the U.S. remains solid. We feel pretty confident in saying that we're not near the end of the business cycle and that we're not slipping into recession. All indications of the economy so far here in 2018 in terms of our outlook going forward look pretty good. And let's go ahead and talk about the numbers a little bit and why we feel that way. And first, if you're not familiar with how GDP is calculated, roughly two-thirds of it is tied to consumer spending, and a third of it would be business spending or business investment. And there's plenty of reasons right now for the consumer to be happy. Consumer spending, if you just look at the fourth quarter, I mentioned that number came in at 2.9%. It was heavily driven by consumer spending. Consumer spending in the fourth quarter came in around at a 4% rate. So obviously consumers are confident and willing to spend money. And if you look at, there's a lot of different sentiment or survey indicators that you can look at regarding how a consumer feels not only about their current situation, but their future expectations. And two of those well-known is the consumer confidence number and consumer expectation number, and both of those are near 20-year highs. So again, the consumer is feeling good about themselves. Doesn't necessarily always translate into robust economic growth, but I do think it gives us a pretty good backdrop for us to at least continue in the healthy environment that we've been in. Also, another reason for consumers to be positive is the job market. And we've talked about this quite a bit on our calls really over the years. And this is the healthiest the job market has been since the financial crisis. Initial jobless claims are now near 45-year lows. So there are very few people filing for unemployment. The unemployment rate is now at 4.1%. It's expected the next reading in April is for that number to come in at 4% as a possibility. Obviously, if they're predicting 4, that it comes in below that. If it were to come in below 4%, that'll be the first time in 18 years that we've seen the unemployment rate drop below 4%. Very good news on that front. And two areas regarding jobs where things have struggled a bit since the financial crisis that we've talked about is the underemployed, those that are no longer seeking employment or working in some sort of part-time capacity. We've seen pretty significant improvement in that underemployed rate from where we were just a couple years ago in wage growth. We've had this healthy job environment for a while, but it hasn't translated necessarily into wage growth. We're starting to see that wage growth number has hovered around 2% since 2010. We're now pushing on 3%. And some of that is tied to tax reform and a lot of companies increasing wages and giving one-time bonuses as a function of tax reform. But it's also becoming a tighter market where the employee has a little bit more leverage than maybe they have in the past. So good news on the consumer front. Switching to the business front, yesterday, ISM released their manufacturing survey. This is one of the more prominent or most followed indicators in terms of business spending. And it was released yesterday. It's the diffusion index, where a reading of 50 is average. Anything above 50 is considered to be good. Anything below 50 is considered to be bad in its simplest terms. Yesterday, the number came in, I think it was 59 and some change. February was over 60, which is a very solid reading. All three, January, February, and March, ISM numbers were very strong. So that's a pretty good indicator, at least in terms of how businesses feel about their current prospects. And just a little bit more data, the questions generally relate to production, orders, inventories, pricing power, et cetera. So it's pretty broad-based and I think gives you some pretty good insight into what's going on with businesses. Now, one thing that did come out in the survey yesterday is there's obviously some concern going forward about trade and what that may do to business and pricing power, et cetera. And I'm going to let Richard talk about that in a few minutes. But bottom line, I think that so far the first quarter numbers have been pretty healthy. I will say that March was a little softer than February. But again, you know, the point that I really wanted to make in talking about the economy, and I know my comments were probably pretty rosy, but in face of all the volatility that's going on in the stock market, I wanted to make sure that our listeners understand that we don't think it's necessarily, again, a function of us slipping into recession. I'm going to let Greg talk on to the reasons why we're going through a difficult, more volatile stock market, but I really don't think it's a function of any red flags necessarily on the economic front. As far as predictions for the quarter, the Atlanta Fed GDP Now, which is a prediction model that we've talked about in the past that we really like to follow, it takes actual hard data that comes in over the course of the quarter. They built a model that predicts what they think GDP will be for that respective quarter. That number's at 2.8% right now, so kind of similar to what we've seen during the last three quarters of 2017. I think a lot of economists believe that number is likely to come in around closer to 2.5%, but we'll see. And we'll see if it comes in, you know, closer to 3 as the Atlanta Fed GDP Now model predicts. Looking forward, beyond for the remainder of 2018, we really haven't seen the full impacts of the fiscal stimulus or tax reform, and I do think that has the probability or possibility to drive GDP for the remainder of 2018 into that 3% range. Obviously, a lot of wild cards that we're going to talk on the remainder of the call that could disrupt that, and with that, we'll just go ahead and turn it over to Richard. Richard, obviously quite a bit of news regarding trade and tariffs. It's obviously been a concern to the stock market. I think over the weekend, in response to some of the tariffs U.S. put on China goods, China retaliated and put tariffs on, I think it's $3 billion in U.S. goods. Give us a little color on exactly what's going on, and also some commentary on whether, you know, this is sort of a negotiation tactic, or are we headed into full-blown trade war? Richard?
Yes, thank you, Dave. That's those are topics I was definitely planning on getting into here this morning. So let me start with sort of a general statement that obviously we do not know how this will all turn out when you have significant negotiations like this going on and actions and reactions. But one view that is worth considering, I'm not going to say it's absolute certainty here, obviously, but is that based on the stock market action that's been occurring and putting it in the context of the fiscal bill, the tax bill that passed a few months ago, it looks like that investors are putting an overemphasis on the potential negative outcome with regard to trade and are still underestimating the potential impact from fiscal stimulus. You know, time will tell whether that is truly the case or not. We have noticed that, as Dave just indicated, there has really not been any real impact on economic activity from the trade tensions that have been developing here lately. Pretty good economic numbers that have been come out, as you heard. Just to put some numbers on that, through the end of March, there's been a loss of about $2.7 trillion in shareholder wealth from starting at the time when President Trump first mentioned at the Davos, Switzerland World Economic Forum that he was going to target China for intellectual property violations. Through the end of March, that loss of value, again, through the end of March, didn't count the downturn yesterday in the market, $2.7 trillion, pretty big number. Another way of looking at that is the overall increase in shareholder wealth since November, when the tax bill was first introduced, which was most of us thought, continue to think, that it's pretty strong, pretty positive for the U.S. economy, very stimulative tax bill. Shareholder wealth has increased a modest 0.6%. So obviously it had gone up pretty substantially before the trade talk began. It's given a lot of that back. So that seems pretty odd. The reason we think it's odd is that so far there's been about $37 billion in tariffs announced. Compare that to the fiscal stimulus in 2018 alone, not considering looking out a few years. In 2018 alone, $800 billion in fiscal stimulus, $37 billion in tariffs. You can see why it's kind of fairly easy to see that maybe there's an overemphasis on the potential negative outcome and not enough emphasis on the known positive outcomes. So clearly investors are placing a bet that this trade business is going to escalate. And that's perhaps not unfounded, but still there's a possibility that this is a little bit over the top in terms of the concerns by the market at this point. Time will tell on that. The market really does not like uncertainty. That's always been the case. And the uncertainty over the magnitude of these tariffs and how the tit-for-tat may develop is a concern. It could result in a drop in business confidence in among CEOs of major corporations as well as small businesses has been very, very strong, and that needs to be continued to ensure that the fiscal stimulus that's been put in place actually results in wage gains, capital spending, and all those positives that help propel the economy forward. It's worth noting that the escalation of China talks, trade talks going on recently, as well as the talk of the regulation of the tech giants such as Facebook, the Trump administration tends to if you notice the pattern, they tend to talk very tough and then tend to back away more quietly. That's been the pattern, and so it's worth at least considering that may continue, but we're going to talk both sides of that story here in a second. So here's an example of the way this has gone so far. When the global steel and aluminum tariffs were put on, there's been a quiet retracement or a backing away from 65% of those global steel and aluminum tariffs. When there originally there was a statement that there would be no exemptions, there's been a lot of exemptions. And then on the NAFTA negotiations, the administration has quietly dropped the demand that all vehicles made in Canada and Mexico must have at least 50% U.S. content. That's been dropped. And finally, there was a similar moderation that occurred when there was a solar panel negotiations. Those got really watered down pretty strongly. So it's at least worth considering that maybe the same type of behavior in the negotiations might happen on China. But there's another way to look at this as well, and it's obviously not as positive. With regard to China, it's been a subject that President Trump talked about well before he was even considering, at least publicly considering, being a presidential candidate. He's also hired, as we've said before, a couple of advisors that are very strongly in favor of coming down on China's trade practices. So it may be somewhat unwise in this particular case to think that the same negotiating pattern may occur. The president, as well as his advisors, are very concerned about the way China treats trading partners, including the U.S., and they want to do something about it. They think the trade practices are very unfair and are very detrimental to the U.S. economy. So the other thing to remember is that he is able to act unilaterally on a lot of trade and tariff positions. So what was announced just recently is 25% tariffs will go on at this stage unknown portions of the aerospace, information, and communication technology businesses in China, as well as machinery in China. The criteria for the inclusion on the list are such things as what will produce maximum pain on China, minimum pain on the U.S. consumer. And he also wants to target the Made in China 2025 industries. That's a initiative going on in China right now. The final list of the actual industries that will be targeted won't be published for a couple of months, but the overall amount of the tariffs are targeted to be about $50 billion. Again, remember that compares to an $800 billion fiscal stimulus of the tax package. So still not particularly large. The trade representative also mentioned that there may be additional rounds of tariffs after that. Don't just think it stops with the initial list. As Dave mentioned, China did respond just yesterday with a pretty tough talk and then imposing a rather small overall tariff of about $3 billion on about 120 U.S. products, mainly in the fruit, nut, wine, and some steel piping. Again, $3 billion. It was a fairly small initiative, but they said they would be willing and plan to match U.S.'s tariffs with intensity and size. So there are negotiations going on behind the scenes, according to Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. We don't know what the outcomes of those will be. Hopefully this will not escalate, but I suspect the news will likely get worse before it gets better. So time will tell, and we will continue to watch it. That's where it stands, Dave.
Okay. Well, thank you, Richard. Greg, you heard those comments, and obviously it's been a bit disruptive to the market, but I suspect it's more than that. I know you want to review the numbers for the month of March, so after you do that, I really think it would be important to sort of address the recent volatility. And, you know, you heard my comments about the economy. The economy seems healthy. Earnings, just incredible. And I think expectations for earnings in the first quarter are very, very strong, yet there seems to be some sort of disconnect with the market, and obviously trade's a factor, but I'd really love to hear your thoughts on that. So why don't you go ahead and review the numbers real quick for March, and then let's get into the more important commentary.
Well, actually, I thought I'd start out with the few topics because I think they have
been.
I thought they have been dominating the news, and I think there are some important things to emphasize there. But before we get into the index numbers, again, volatility is back. Since the mini correction in the beginning of February and the subsequent sell-off in March, much of the news headlines have been reporting this huge increase in volatility in the stock market. And, of course, this is true, but also I think it needs to be put into perspective that we've been in such a long period since the financial crisis. You know, we've had periodic spikes, but of below-normal volatility. And if you look back at that VIX index, which, again, are the implied volatilities of the options exchange, and it's kind of a fear index, so the higher the number, the more nervous, if you want to call it, people are about the market. The VIX index has averaged a value of around 20. So you can kind of look at that when we talk about P/E ratios, that the median P/E is around 15 times earnings. Well, the VIX is around 20 in terms of its historical fluctuations. So really, we're just getting back to that level. So you could say we are getting back to normal levels of volatility for stocks. What we've experienced is a very abnormal level of volatility, and I think it lends complacency. So really, in a way, people need to realize that these aren't CDs, that stocks can be volatile. And if you look at that just recently period from the first quarter of 2016 through the end of 2017, the VIX averaged a little above 12.5. So clearly that's much lower. And as we enter a normalized economy, a normalized interest rate environment, we're also perhaps, I think, moving back to normal levels of volatility in stocks. And I think as people kind of think about their asset allocation decisions, that they need to consider that we could be in an extended period of more normal stock level volatility, and that, you know, this may be the norm and not the exception. The other thing, of course, is just the most recent decline in addition to the one we had in February. And this one has really been led by technology stocks, and it led the markets lower as we ended the month of March, closing out the first quarter of 2018. Tech shares have been the market leaders for quite some time, and in particular the so-called FANG stocks, which, you know, we've talked about on this call before, which stand for Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Netflix, and Google. And these stocks have been the models for growth, much as tech stocks were the darlings of the late 1990s, which ended in the bursting of the tech bubble. Although valuations of these companies are extended, it does not match the rampant speculation of the late 90s. Our March decline had more to do with Facebook's data breach and Trump singling out Amazon as a monopoly that is killing small business as two examples. And aside from the previously mentioned, the same themes that prompted the February sell-off, in addition to the two that I just mentioned, include the tariffs that Richard just talked about, future interest rate increases, inflation fears, and yield curve flattening, which, you know, some of the bond market participants look at that as, you know, could it invert? And an inverted bond yield curve suggests a recession. And as you pointed out, rightly so, that things are still pretty good. I mean, obviously, it's never perfect, but they're pretty good. And although not being highlighted as much, I think, at least for the current term, the upcoming midterm elections are also on investors' minds. So I think that's out there yet, too. And I was reading a piece recently where they said, you know, you could see some kind of a correction, and perhaps we're already having this in response to other economic data. In terms of the overall market performance of the indices, we saw some things were actually up for the month. We saw a reversal in leadership, with large cap stocks performing the worst and smaller capitalization issues performing better. So it's kind of the opposite of what we saw most of last year, where the large were outperforming the small. The S&P 500 was down over 2.5%, with mid caps performing positively up almost 1%. And then small caps were the clear winners, with about a 2% gain for the month. which puts them as the only index of the three with positive performance for the first quarter of 2018, coming in at a positive 0.57. The sell-off in U.S. stocks was not in isolation either, and looking at the foreign markets, foreign shares also declined in sympathy. Developed market indices were off slightly, off a negative 1.5. Emerging markets, which are a little smaller, obviously, were down negative 2.6. And frontier markets, the smallest of the foreign markets, performed the best, actually, down only, I think, 1.16. In terms of style, S&P Growth Index declined more than the S&P Value Index. It was down a minus 3% versus a minus 2%, respectively. And if regular listeners to this call, if you recall, growth was the clear winner in 2017, easily outperforming value by significantly huge numbers. And growth still holds the first place in terms of performance quarter to date with a positive 1.9% return, while value still trails at a loss of a minus 3.6. But who knows, you know, maybe 2018 value does come back. Usually these things do revert to the mean. In terms of economic sectors, not everything was down in the economic sectors. Three sectors actually had positive performance, that being real estate, which is up 3.8, utilities were up 3.8, and energy was up 1.7. The worst performing sectors, surprisingly, were financials, down a minus 4.3, materials down a minus 4.2, and tech was down a minus 3.9, so all more or less in line. But amazingly, even with as much as tech has been down and driving these corrections, it still ended up being the best performing sector for the quarter, up 3.5%, just demonstrating, I think, how far the tech stocks have climbed. So they've got plenty of cushion below them yet. Finally, I think to end, things are still looking positive for the first quarter earnings reports. The fourth quarter earnings growth of last year, for last year, came in the more optimistic side at around 15% if you look at it on a year-over-year basis. So that's a pretty big number. That's pretty good. I think originally we were looking maybe 12%. So things did come in much better. And as both of you previously alluded to, Wall Street suggests that this past quarter could do the same, excluding the impact of tax reform. But with tax reform, there is wide optimism that the reported earnings growth rate could be significantly higher, but we'll see over the coming weeks. Some of the numbers I'm seeing are incredibly hard to believe, and I think there's, you know, some bias that smaller companies may benefit outsized compared to larger cap companies, but they could be big numbers, and that that would be a good thing.
Yep. Well, thank you, Greg. Jeff, the bond market, well, I'll talk about the Fed first. The Fed seemed to really kind of be immune to all the things that were going on and continued on their path by tightening 25 basis points in the month of March. Talk a little bit about your expectations going forward with the Fed, and then also talk about long-term interest rates. They've been kind of whipsawed in the face of all this volatility that we've seen in the stock market.
Well, that's right, Dave. This was Jerome Powell's first meeting as the chairman of the Federal Reserve, and I think he really wanted to give you know, an image of calm and consistency, so that's exactly what he delivered. The meeting went largely as expected. The Fed voted to raise 25 basis points as expected. The range is now 1.5% to 1.75%. The Fed cited reasons, the tight job market, the strong economy, and the stimulative effect of the tax cuts as their motivation for raising those rates. They also indicated that they were still on track for two more increases this year, so that makes a total of three increases for 2018. It's important to point out, though, that there were a significant number of members on the committee that felt that four increases for this year might be appropriate. They were in the minority, so the announcement said it was basically around two more increases, but there is a fair number of people on the committee who think that four increases for 2018 or three more for this year would be appropriate. So stay tuned. That number could be important later on this year if the economy does catch fire and the Fed does feel like it has to increase three more times this year. They also increased the number of forecasted increases for 2019. Previously, they were only thinking two increases. They changed that now to three increases for 2019. And the and also Chairman Powell talked about inflation and said that inflation, while modestly rising, is really on track to reach their goal of 2%. So inflation doesn't seem to be an issue. Outside of the Federal Reserve, investors via the Fed funds futures market are still skeptical. They're still only anticipating two more increases this year. So as is, has been the case for the past couple of years, the market is kind of in a show-me mode. The Fed actually did what they said they were going to do last year for the first time in a long time. So they're making believers out of investors. But investors continue to be somewhat skeptical about the Fed's plans to increase rates as much as the Fed is talking about. The other big news, I think, lately in the interest rate markets has been around LIBOR, the London Interbank Offered Rate. LIBOR is kind of an inside baseball lending thing that most people don't get involved with unless you have a floating rate loan. In Europe, almost all floating rate bank loans are priced off of a LIBOR index. Here in the United States, a lot of banks use that as well. And it's, there's been a surprisingly quick and significant rise of about 30 basis points over the last couple of months. So if you have a floating rate loan and it's resetting on a rate basis, then you're liable to see an increase here shortly. The reason is, oddly enough, people are citing tax reform and the repatriation of dollars from around the world, primarily Europe, back to the United States. So that money flowing out of Europe and into back into the United States is essentially causing the London Interbank Rate, the LIBOR rate, to rise in Europe. So that's been an interesting thing that's been in the news a lot as well. On a more broader perspective, really the bond markets took a breather. For a couple months now, rates have been rising on the intermediate to longer term end of the curve. During the month of March, things were flat to down a little bit, depending upon the maturity. The two-year rate rose 6 basis points. The Treasury 10-year rate dropped 12 basis points. And that left the curve, the yield curve, the difference between 10 years and 2 years, at what we call a very flat yield curve. The difference between those two dropped from 34 basis points down to 20 basis points. Well, so why is that important? Well, flat yield curves generally indicate slowing economic conditions. So the bond market is actually signaling some things that the stock market isn't really signaling based on corporate profits and the comments that Dave made earlier. So we're watching that closely, but for the most part, it was a quiet month in the bond markets. Corporate spreads widened a little bit, while municipal bonds really were returning to normal post-tax reform. Things are kind of, dynamics are kind of moving back into equilibrium for demand versus supply. So, again, it was a quiet month with a couple of noteworthy things, mostly with the Fed taking place, but we'll see. The Fed has got a lot of plans for this year, so it will be interesting to watch, Dave.
Great. Thank you, Jeff, and thank you, everyone, for joining us this morning. Join us next month when our meeting will be on Tuesday, May 1st. Thank you.